Don't get too comfortable down here. Last week, John was reminding us Babylon is running out of time. She won't last forever, but now time's up. She's dead. This is a funeral. And so again, John offers us these two angles on her funeral. First, we'll look at the heavenly angle, their song, and then we'll look at the earthly song. So to see the heavenly song, we can actually go down to the end, verse 20. What does heaven say to do? Are we supposed to be so sad she's gone? No, it says, rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, for God has given judgment for you against her. What is the basic theme of heaven's song over Babylon? Good riddance. Ding dong, the witch is gone. We're supposed to be happy Babylon is gone. This is an awkward funeral. From heaven's perspective, Babylon is worthless and heaven is glad to see the city go. You might wonder, why do you have to be so mean? You know, it's sort of rude. You know, if we went to a funeral and someone started singing, yay, I'm so glad they're gone, we'd say, whoa, cool it. Well, this is a bit of unfinished business in the Bible. As we said last week, Babylon is actually very ancient. If you look to Genesis 11:4, what is Babylon all about? It says in Genesis 11:4, then they said, come, let us build a city for ourselves and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. The idea that is at the center of Babylon is I can make a name for myself. But what's the problem in Genesis? What is humanity made for? Are we made for our own glory? Are we made for our own name? We're made for God's name and God's glory. It says we're made in His image. But Babylon is all about human glory. It's a self-made city. It's for self-made men. And so heaven says to this, good riddance. Glad you are gone. And then heaven provides two specific reasons that it is good that she is gone. First, we see in verse 3, what is the problem that Babylon continually presents? For all nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have grown rich from the power of her luxurious living. Good riddance to Babylon. Why? Temptation. Temptation. We have already heard this language back in Revelation 14, which is borrowing from several parts in the Bible. But do you remember what we reminded ourselves last week? What are the basic temptations of Babylon? One, pleasure, power, the promise of safety. Babylon promises to meet all your needs, but what's the problem? The promise is a lie. But there's more to this. It's not just that our temptations are going away. It's this idea of judgment on the temptation. While yes, heaven hates our sin, the actual sins we commit, what else does heaven hate? Heaven hates what tempts us to sin. Think of it this way. Who has a greater desire for you to quit smoking? You, your doctor, or God? Who has a greater desire for you to quit gossiping? You, your spouse, or Jesus? Heaven hates our temptation. And so Babylon here is representing the center of all human temptation. And heaven says, good riddance. But why else does heaven gloat over Babylon? It's in verse 20. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, for God has given judgment for you against her. From heaven's perspective, Babylon's downfall has been a long time coming. Heaven didn't just spring this on Babylon. John has already used this language of vengeance in Revelation 6 and 17. As we've said before, Revelation is a pro-martyrdom book. Jesus is on the side of those who lose their life for the gospel. But what is the opposite and equally true idea? So Jesus is cheering on the martyrs, comforting the martyrs. What's he doing here? He is promising to avenge, kill, judge those who kill the martyrs. We need to understand the Jesus of the Bible isn't a softy. He's very, very patient, more patient than any of you. But he isn't weak. This judgment is a long time coming. Listen to Jesus' own words in Matthew 23:35. So that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the sanctuary and the altar. The Bible is clear. Jesus is keeping track of every drop of martyr blood, and he will avenge them. If you persecute Christians, if you arrest Christians, if you kill Christians, you should be absolutely terrified of Jesus. Jesus will hunt you down and find you. If you don't believe me, just ask Saul of Tarsus. Yes, this judgment on Babylon is a long time coming. So heaven's song sort of boils down to, good riddance, Babylon is dead. Good riddance, may her temptations die with her. And good riddance, this is a long time coming. That's quite a song to sing at a funeral, right? Well, that's how heaven feels. Good riddance. But how does everyone else feel? It's very clear how Jesus and heaven and God feel about Babylon. How's everyone else feel? Let's look at verse 9. And the kings of the earth who committed sexual immorality and lived in luxury with her will weep and wail over her when they see the smoke of her burning. Heaven says good riddance. What does everyone else say? I'm sure going to miss her. I'm going to miss Babylon. I'm going to miss Houston. I'm going to miss Dallas. I'm going to miss Yoakum. I know this is hard for us to believe here in Yoakum, but there are just some people in the world who just really love a big city. They just love the lights and the sounds and the smells. They just love the idea of it. And well, that's actually why Babylon was founded. Humans have liked cities for a long, long time. Babylon doesn't actually begin in Genesis 11. It begins with a man in Genesis 10. Genesis 10:8, listen for the man. Cush fathered Nimrod. He was the first on earth to be a mighty man. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. The beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calneh in the land of Shinar. We're not going to go too deep into the theology of Genesis here, but look again at verse 9. Who is the famous guy who starts all the cities? Who is it, kids? Nimrod. Nimrod. Do you know what his name means? Rebellion. This is a rebellious man. And don't let the phrase mighty hunter trick you. This isn't talking about deer hunting. It's not talking about Bass Pro Shops. This word for mighty hunter is the idea of a tyrant, a dictator. Long story short, Nimrod was one of the first men in human history to say, I'm going to rule the world and I'm going to do it my way. And he almost did it. He founds Babylon. That's what Babel is, the same idea. Babylon is founded by men who look over creation and say, I should rule here. So of course kings and powerful men mourn Babylon. It's the source of their power. But this loss of power is not the only reason for their songs. Who else sings and why do they sing over Babylon? We can see this in verse 15 and 16. It's not just the kings. Who else is here? It says, the merchants of these wares who gained wealth from her, he will stand far off in fear of her torment, weeping and mourning aloud. Alas, alas, for the great city that was clothed in fine linen, in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold, with jewels, and with pearls. There are men who mourn the fall of Babylon because it's the loss of their power. But why will many, many men mourn the loss of Babylon? It's because they'll lose out on revenue. Quarter 3 is not going to be very good because Babylon has fallen. John's people would actually understand this song very well. Most of them aren't in positions of power. But anybody in the Roman Empire, they can say, Emperor Nero is a tyrant, he's a jerk, I don't like his power. And then the Christians, of course, could say, I don't like him persecuting them. But they could all acknowledge, Nero's roads help make men rich. Rome, for all of her wickedness, helps facilitate commerce. They put up with the empire in their day because it helped them make a buck. You might be a Roman under the Roman Empire and say, I hate the Senate. They're always bickering. They're always backstabbing. But you know what you'll say? But their investment in my colony has helped me feed my family. There are men who mourn Babylon because it is a loss of wealth. If Babylon falls, we will lose our wealth. How many people today say this? God bless America. But here's what they really mean. God bless my paycheck. They'll even go to a different country if they can make more money there. How does Paul say it this way in 1 Timothy 6:10? For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. How many men would say, the heavenly city is paved with gold, but in the meantime, I'm going to get as much of Rome's silver as I can? And so everyone mourns this loss of wealth, this loss of revenue. But what feature actually comes in all three songs sung by the men of the earth? I'll read these rapid fire. Listen to the theme over and over. Verse 10, they will stand far off in fear of her torment and say, alas, alas, you great city, you mighty city Babylon, for in a single hour your judgment has come. Verse 17, for in a single hour all this wealth has been laid waste, and all shipmasters and seafaring men, sailors, and all those who trade on the sea stood far off. Verse 19, and they threw dust on their heads as they wept and mourned, crying out, alas, alas, for the great city where all who had ships at sea grew rich by her wealth, for in a single hour she's been laid waste. What's the third reason they mourn? Earthly kings mourn because they lose their power. The merchants mourn because they lose their wealth. But why is everyone so astonished at this funeral? She died so suddenly. We didn't expect it. We didn't see it coming. And you all know this. If you've ever been to a funeral for a young person, do you know what I mean? Which funeral hits you harder? The funeral for someone who died in their 80s after a long battle with cancer? Or the death of a college student that suddenly died in a car crash? It's the one that's more sudden, the one that's more unexpected. That is how everyone on earth feels about Babylon. Everyone looks at their current situation, the situation with our nation, our city, your own home, whatever situation you're in, and we all think, we like to pretend, our best days are ahead of us. The good days are just around the corner. Our age of peace and prosperity will never end. That was Rome's actual boast. Our peace will never end. But how does Jesus say it in Matthew 24:39? And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. Nobody expects disaster. Nobody except who? God. The one that can't wait for Babylon to fall. It's been a long time coming. God has tolerated Babylon too long. But all the kings and merchants are crying, saying, we were just getting started. Next quarter, I was going to make it big. But what is John teaching us? Come out of Babylon and be careful how you mourn. Yes, John wants his churches to flee the temptations and judgments of Babylon. But even more, he wants them to examine how they feel about Babylon falling. Are they going to say, I'm going to miss her? All the wealth, all the temptation, all the power, it was sort of nice. Or will these churches, like heaven does, say good riddance. I am so glad that Jesus has destroyed the source of all my temptation. Really, all these dirges, these funeral songs, are meant to make John's people remember. Their home is not Ephesus or Smyrna or Sardis or Yoakum. What's their home? It's not Babylon. It's the heavenly city. How does the author of Hebrews say it in Hebrews 11:16? But as it is, they desire a better country. That is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared for them a city. So if all of Revelation is about getting us to the heavenly city, getting us there, then we need to make sure we're not trying to stay put, making this our home. We need to make sure we won't spend all of our time in heaven saying, oh, I wish I was still in Houston. Oh, heaven would be more perfect if I just got to go to one more Astros game. No, will your heart say with heaven, good riddance? Or are you going to say, I really miss Babylon? And to that idea, John warns, come out of Babylon and be careful how you mourn. Now let us apply this question first to the Christian. A simple question for you. Do you want out? Do you want out? If you hear John's message and it makes you examine your life, that's a good thing. You should examine yourself. Whenever heaven says, come out, does part of you say, oh, I'd rather stay. I sort of like it here. We've been preaching about the heavenly city since January, its purity, its glory, its worship, its authority. And have you secretly thought, I'd rather stay in Yoakum. I've got it pretty good here. I sure am going to miss what I have here. Be warned. Jesus says it this way in John 15:19. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. See, I think some of us have the wrong idea about being a Christian. We think being a Christian is like this. I'm scared of fire. I'm scared of hell. I don't want to go to the bad place. That's not Christianity at all. That's just being afraid. No, here is what being a Christian is. Jesus, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to be stuck in my sin anymore. I don't want to be in Babylon anymore. Jesus, bring me home. It's not being afraid of going to someplace. It's desiring a better country. So Christian, do you want out? The good news is, I promise you, if you tell Jesus, hey Jesus, I want to go home. I want to leave Babylon behind. I've got all these sins and things dragging me out, but I want to leave. I promise you, Jesus will unleash all of His divine power to get you home. And the good news is, He'll knock Babylon over on the way out the door. If you're here today and you're like, I have this sin, I have this temptation, I feel like I will never escape, Revelation 18 promises you, Jesus will blow it up. And we will all say good riddance. But here's the bad news. I think some of us would rather stay in Babylon. Whenever Jesus comes back, are you going to say, Jesus, I thought I'd have a little more time with my favorite sins. I don't know if I'm ready to give up this temptation yet. I thought I'd get a little more time with my lust. I thought I'd get to drink one more beer before you took me. I thought I'd get to spend more money on myself before you came, Jesus. Can you wait a minute? Christian, I want this question to shake your soul. Do you want out? Jesus won't force anyone to go to heaven if you'd rather stay in Yoakum. Do you want out? Is the world your home, or is heaven your home? Now, non-Christian, first of all, thank you for sticking here with us. You probably hear us talking, and you're like, I don't want to be a Christian. Christians, they laugh at cities that die. They insult people at funerals. Not for me. And that's fine. But I need to warn you today, Here's your warning. This is the best it will get. This is as good as it's going to get for you, non-Christian. The warning, come out of Babylon, is a warning for Jesus' church. It's not for you. No, your warning is this is the best it will get. Isaiah 22:13 says it this way. Listen to Isaiah's sort of honest despair here. And behold, joy and gladness, killing oxen and slaughtering sheep, eating flesh and drinking wine. Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we what? We die. The Lord of hosts has revealed himself in my ears. Surely this iniquity will not be atoned for until you die, says the Lord of hosts. See, non-Christian, do you know the real reason that the kings and merchants are mourning Babylon? Do you know why you should mourn Babylon? This is the best that it will get. I hope to shock some sense into you. Non-Christian, I encourage you, sin and enjoy life as much as you can, because the Bible promises us this is as good, this is as close to heaven as you will get. You truly have only so many sunsets left. You better go enjoy them. You have only so many sexual encounters left. You have only so many nights at the bar left. How does Isaiah say it? Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. This is all you got, non-Christian? But Isaiah has another word. He says in verse 14, surely this iniquity will not be atoned for until you die. Non-Christian, what Isaiah and I am trying to say to you is the bill will come due. You can live your life in rebellion to God. You can follow Nimrod's example. I'm going to live my way. I'm going to live for my kingdom, my power, my glory, what I want to do. But then you'll die, and you'll have to atone for your sins all by yourself. You have to pay the bill by yourself. And the Bible promises that God is so holy and so pure, you will pay for that forever. It will take eternity. And if you're honest, you should be terrified of that. What's the worst thing here? It's that your best days of your eternal existence, especially if you're further along, if you're in your twilight years, you're going to say forever, my best days were behind me. I'm never getting my 20s back. I'm never getting my 30s back. Do you know the worst part about hell? The absolute worst part, other than not feeling the grace and love of God? The worst part of hell is this. It's not the fire. It's knowing forever that it will not get better. All of the good things are in the past. And they're not coming back to you, non-Christian. But hear the promise of the gospel, the promise of revelation, is that Jesus came to pay your bill, to atone for your sin, so that he can bring you to a better city. Listen to Revelation 21, 27. But nothing unclean will ever enter it, nor anyone who does what is detestable or false, but only those who are written in the Lamb's book of life. Non-Christian, what I hold out for you today is Jesus can still get you to this city. So I ask, do you want him to get you to this city? I'm going to warn you, he's king there, not you. And I'll warn you, when you get there, he's going to kill all of your sin. He's going to blow them up and burn them up with Babylon. But I promise you, if you turn away from your sin, if you switch your allegiance from Babylon to heaven, and you trust him to get you there, he will get you home. Nothing can stop him. He will make heaven your home. But in the meantime, let us heed John's warning. Come out of Babylon. And be careful how you mourn.